meeting to order. Sorry.
Are we good now?
Okay, great. Tuesday, December 9th, 9:15 a.m. The Port Commission of the Port of Houston Authority meeting is now called to order. So let's just let me start out with a couple of comments, and I just want to welcome everybody to our last meeting of the year. Happy holidays. Also our last meeting in this room, and we have a standing room only crowd today. And when we move to our new project in the new building in East River, we'll have plenty of seats, right, Eric?
Eric is popular that I can't enter that.
Eric is the project manager in chief for our new building, so I'm really excited about moving to
that. Didn't blame me if something goes wrong.
Yeah, of course. And you'll be retired, so it won't matter.
We are downtrodden people.
We are, absolutely. We're looking forward to being in East River for sure. We had a very big week last week, a couple things that went on, one of which was Kelly and I, industry and the Greater Houston Partnership and the Gulf Coast Protection Agency and the district, all went to Washington, D.C. on Friday and met with senior officials promoting the port and making sure that they understood how important the port was and how important it was to be great partners with the federal government through the Corps of Engineers and the Coast Guard. And we had a very, very productive meeting. And then when we flew back, we had Charlie and I, along with a lot of clearly the port folks that set up our fourth annual community research resource fair at the San Pasadena High School. And when Charlie and I were touring with Maria and Garrett and the team, I asked Maria, so how many people are going to attend? She goes, well, 5,000 people maybe. And I'm like, what? A lot. And it turns out we had 7,051 people who walked through those doors. And just to give you a sense of it, we had 90 vendors. So people could get a mammogram, they could get a checkup from the doctor, they could set up a food for their kids. There was one vendor that had their mission was delivered three meals a day to children under 5 years old. You can sign up for that and then get your meals delivered. In addition, we had a ton of vendors at Walmart and others that donated like a massive amount of children's toys and basics like towels and water bottles and all kinds of different things. And those were all distributed to people along with food, big boxes of food for the holidays and stuff. And there were two things that struck me. One was just how many people are in need and how many people will come out to an event like that and be part of a community, and I think that's really telling about how important it is for us at the port to not just be a business about cargo and a business about creating jobs. Obviously, that's our business, but it's that giving back to the community. It's making sure that we're part of that community and we create better fabric in the community to help people that are really in need. So I was just amazed by that. There was one thing that kind of struck me too, is as we walked through, people would come up to us because we were all in our port gear, right? So, and they would just thank us randomly. Thank you so much for doing this. I wouldn't have had, toys for my kids, that kind of thing. There was a couple of moments where we were by where the food was and food boxes and stuff, and this woman was carrying these like two big boxes and one of them fell. And so I picked up the box and I took it out to her car. And she was telling me on the way, she was a Pasadena high school graduate. She saw our resource fair on the website and how she got her daughter to come and all these other friends. And she was really, really happy that the port would put something like that on. I also saw one where Charlie, the woman's box broke. Charlie and Maria were putting all their stuff in a big bag and helping your car. So we really do care about people in the port. We really do want to be part of the community and help folks. And this is going to be an annual event, obviously, it's our fourth year. But one of the things that we've talked about a lot is our Anchored in Action program. And the idea behind that, if you haven't heard it, which you probably have, but if you haven't, I'm going to tell you again. So the idea is to have the port be the lead in terms of understanding what the community needs. And so we've spent, our team has spent countless hours. I think we've had talked to 10,000 people, something like that, plus or minus, through community listening events, lots of pizza, lots of nights out and lunches out, to try to understand what the community really wants and then try to prioritize those needs. And then have the port be the catalyst with the industry to bring a broader community of people in and around the channel to help support our local community. So we'll be hearing a lot more about that next year. We'll be launching it and making sure that we do more in the community. I know there's today we have a number of public speakers scheduled today, and we always welcome public comment. I just want to make sure that people understand in public comment, near the state law, we are not allowed to make comments back because it hasn't been posted, and there's an open meetings law that says we can't discuss things that haven't been posted on our agenda. So we're listening, we hear you, our team is here, and I can guarantee you that every comment that's made is taken down, and somebody's going to reach out to you, or you can reach out back to them if there's a need. Specifically, Maria Berry is our community relations department. She's happy to talk to you. Maria, wave your hand. So anybody who ever wants to talk about an issue with the board, make sure you chat with Maria and she'll get it back to us. I know we have, over the past couple of months, heard comments regarding one of our customers, Marisk, and we hear you. And again, we are not allowed to make comments at the meetings. Finally, I just want to recognize today, we always at our Port Commission meetings recognize anniversaries. And today, I want to highlight one, a 35-year anniversary of a port employee who's done a ton of different jobs. He started as an intern at Port Houston 35 years ago, and that would be Charlie Jenkins, our CEO. Charlie? And Charlie will highlight some others. We have some other 25 and 35-year employees here as well. We call, as my company, we call those half-lifers because they've definitely been more than half their life at the port. You generally don't have that kind of tenure. So we do appreciate it. We understand this is a people business. It's a team business. It starts with our port teams, our 1,700 employees. I add ILA into that, by the way, to get to 1,700. So our ILA partners, our Corps of Engineers, the pilots, the seafarers, the Coast Guard, everyone in this room who I didn't mention, obviously, are part of the team to get you here. This is a team effort to provide a positive economic growth and the situation for the overall economy here in Houston. We appreciate your help and work on that. So with that, commissioners, do you have any comments or?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I just want to comment on Charlie. 35 years ago, when he came to the waterfront, we brought him in for you.
You did. I'm glad you didn't break him.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Any other? Your last meeting of the year, last chance.
Next one.
Oh, that's a meeting at the end of the year.
Oh, yeah.
Now you have one more.
You were talking about the community. Well, I went to the first one. It has really grown. That one, we were surprised at the turnout, too. There were not that many vendors.
Yeah.
500. And it's amazing how it's grown and how it's needed, particularly now of all times. And I'm glad we're doing it at Christmas time, which is a great opportunity to help folks with Christmas gifts and everything. So I'm just so proud of the job that our community engagement, Maria and crew do. They, in many ways, are the face of our organization in the communities, and they just do a phenomenal job. We try to help people, and I hope the work continues to do so.
Anybody else? Well, Carly and I were at the Pilots holiday event, and just a reminder of the great work the pilots do. Us on the chicken, and I want to thank them. There's probably some pilots here, so thank you for what you do to keep things moving.
Great. Okay, let's then move on to the approval of the minutes on C1. So,
motion.
Second.
Okay, motion. All fair to the aye.
Aye.
Okay. All right, staff reports. Holly, you're up.
Sure. Well, excited to be here for the last meeting in this building, and I'll give Eric a little warranty here. It might be a little rough in the new boardroom in the new building. We're moving in a day before. There'll be boxes. Ignore the clutter. I know you all understand that. We're going to get it done. We'll figure it out. But the team has let me know there's a lot of pressure in the closeout for the boardroom and the technology, but we've got the right team to deliver. So we're working hard. I already spoke with Ron this morning, Eric, to check his fault.
Yeah, I was going to say, where's IT?
We're going to make it happen. So just reflecting back on what the chairman said, you know, we're all hit with, we all have a very important job. What we do matters. And doing it correctly is critical to the region and the everything. I'll just leave it at that. And so I like to think of simple taglines to help clarify 1,000 words into a simple statement. So, you know, we're trying to grow the region's maritime economy the right way. And the right way means so many different things. It's encyclopedias of data. But this career fair that Maria and her team put together and the amount of work it took is a perfect example of the right way. I will tell you, it was so touching, you know, listening at little girls clinging to their mom's leg, staring over at a table that Walmart donated Barbies, seeing the desire and the raw hunger in their eye and their joy when they get it. It was just so cool. And then the same thing with the food and the others. So I'm just adding on a little bit to the chairman. Maria, make sure your whole team knows the great respect and appreciation. How many port volunteers did we have?
100 volunteers.
From the port team to help manage and get it all put through. And that's people generally giving their time to go do that. So it was cool.
What about your picture with Santa?
Yeah, well.
I'll bring it.
No.
You know me.
Well, Santa was our chief of police. He sat out there and took 7,051 photos, I think, with every person coming by. He was dressed up. He had a number of pillows in his uniform, I hope. I don't know how he's passing police physicals, but he was pretty good. He had to have been warm in all that gear because it turned out being a beautiful day, but he did a great job. Then we had a member of the ILA stop by unannounced in a red slingshot motorcycle with a green latex Grinch suit. That was phenomenal. That Grinch, I thought it was athletic too. Sapphire and took pictures. And even more interesting, one of our team left and went to the zoo with her kids for another event. And this gentleman from ILA showed up there and was doing photos in the parking lot for several hours for his fun for the community. I don't know if you all know about that. I have no idea.
Yeah.
It's a good costume. You could not tell who it was. But anyway, as the chairman mentioned, we recognized at the end of the year a number of team members who reached significant milestones, 20 years and above. I have quite a few of those. They're here today. We're very appreciative of all that they do to help us do things the right way. First, Frank Marker, 35 years, Port Police training and admin sergeant. Next, Tabitha Baker, 25 years, Barber's Cut Terminal Customer Service. Tracy Dobbins, 25 years, Barber's Cut Terminal and Billing Administrator. Deanna Jones, 25 years, BCT Terminal Customer Service Coordinator. Darlene Nguyen, 25 years, customer billing manager revenue. Had to work for Tim that whole time, so actually. just kidding, Jim. Richard Dodson, 20 years, Bayport maintenance electrician and RTG Wolf Crane. And Claudia Torres, 20 years, terminal technology and innovation PI coordinator. You know, these are the people that are here in the meeting that make it all happen. It's not the leadership. It's the team beneath it. It's the foundation of the organization. We have a great staff. They're committed. They all know what we do matters. And we're just blessed to have you on our team. So thank all of you for the celebration and working it. All right, in terms of volumes at the public terminals, Ryan will be reporting numbers that show our volumes dropped some in November, not a lot. We're still very strong, but he'll be filling in that. In terms of the overall port, the numbers aren't up to date. The federal government shutdown, who does the numbers, have it back. We really don't have any new numbers since the last time we presented in November. Pretty quick turn. So we'll make sure we do that at the end of the year. They've told us they'll be catching up pretty quickly. Through November, though, at our container terminals, we're up about 5%. Total tonnage of the port public is up about 4%. And we're at a strong place at the end of the year with a lot of turbulence. And again, very proud of the team in delivering. We'll see what December brings, but we believe we will be setting new records this year for volumes again. Very exciting. It seems every year, record growth. And that just goes from the fortitude and the skill. The fact we focus on being low cost, high service, and low risk to the marketplace, and we're going to maintain that commitment. And also, I see a number of our customers here. It doesn't happen without you bringing and delivering the cargo. So thank you for that partnership. Wharf 7 at Bayport, the team is finishing up the last punch list for the new wharf. We'll be using this wharf as soon as we receive a load of new RTG cranes mid-month. And then work the first container vessel at that wharf shortly thereafter. This will allow us at Bayport to handle 5 vessels at a time versus the present limit of 4. And with this wharf plus the new cranes and support infrastructure, we'll increase our terminal capacity of Bayport by about 500,000 TEU. Speaking of cranes, our 4 ship-to-shore cranes, 4 of the 8 we ordered have left China. They're here at the very beginning of February, and the next 4 cranes are going through their final endurance testing, I believe, while they're being loaded in March.
It will be loaded halfway in the second week of January.
And the delivery is?
It'll be arriving by mid-March.
Mid-March. Okay, great. So that's a pretty exciting thing. We're still working on the crane tariff issue. The visit we had with very senior officials at the White House was all part of that. And we feel very confident some good things are happening, and we'll say those as they actually happen and execute. So that's the end of my remarks, unless there's any questions from the board.
Merchant, any questions? Okay, let's go to appearances. Number one on the list, let's see, we have some folks from Baker Ripple. Yeah, I see Audio Derry.
Good morning.
Paris Lewis, right?
Yes, good morning.
Good to see you.
Good to see you too. So I want to thank the commissioners and especially Rick Campo and Clyde Fitzgerald for your leadership. It means a lot to this work that we're doing. I'm in Support Houston. So thank you for this opportunity to talk a little bit about Baker Ripley and what it depends to get access to the opportunity today and tomorrow. So Baker Ripley and the Port of Houston mission is kind of intertwined because we're moving the world and driving regional prosperity, and Baker Ripley is dedicated to make sure all of our neighbors in the region can participate in that prosperity. And that's not just alignment, but it's a true partnership. And for 118 years, Baker Ripley's been around, and we've been a community development organization and been really dedicated to opening doors for our neighbors. And our founder, Alex Graham Baker, believed that when you invest in people, you transform communities. And we really believe that every day, especially with a lot of things that have been happening with some of the shifts with funding. And we still believe that. And we are proven it's serving nearly 500,000 neighbors each year across the greater Houston area, connecting them to education, jobs, essential resources, and economic mobility. And here's how your support is actually making it even more possible. So since June, nearly 100 hours of STEM programming we have delivered to 137 kids, 117 adults. And they've been learning about coding and robotics and printing, digital design. And these are not just hobbies. These are actually introductions to career pathways that actually lead to careers. And we're not just reaching kids where they are. At Carrillo Elementary, a Title I HISD school on South Lakeside, students are meeting regularly for hands-on coding and robotics. But they're also building with Legos and Vexigo kits, which I just learned about. They're designing robots, and they're tackling real challenges and learning critical thinking skills. But then also, let me tell you a little bit about a moment where we actually saw our mission in motion with Girls, Inc. It was a great partnership, which it brings young women to our East End Learning and Innovation Center. But they're learning about block coding through marine ecosystem simulation. But these girls did not just follow instructions. They're designing and they're engineering, and they are actually building their confidence. But for many, it was the first time they saw themselves as creators, and I think that's a beautiful thing. But then also as problem solvers, as future engineers and scientists, they are having the power of access. So we also have trained over 100 elementary science teachers through our partnership with Rice University, and it's multiplying the impact across Greater Houston classrooms every single day. And we also launched our first Pasadena STEAM program in October, and we already are Pasadena ISD about seasonal camps, because once again, it's about the power of opportunity, it's about access, and seniors are talking or taking digital literacy. So my dad, 70 plus years old, learning how to work a computer, so he's a little too much on Facebook right now, but digital access, right, it's really important. So we're building this for 2026. This is how we build a workforce, this is how we build community and resilience. And this is how we ensure Houston's explosive growth that's for everyone, even at the bringing everyone to the table. But because of your commitment, we're moving lives forward together. And we also understand that the region's prosperity is not sustainable unless families have the skills and support to navigate change and seize opportunity. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay. Next up, we have Susanna Rosas, I'm sorry, Vice President of Impact Plan Giving for Barbara Bush Literacy Foundation. Sorry about your name.
Good morning, Chairman Campo, Commissioners, Mr. Jenkins, and Port Houston staff. My name is Dr. Julie Fink, and I have the distinct privilege of serving as the President and CEO of the Barbara Bush Houston Literacy Foundation. I'm joined here today by my colleague, Donna Rosas, who's the Vice President of Impact and Plan Giving. Thank you for giving us a few minutes of your time. Speak with you today. Our organization was formed by the Bush family more than a decade ago to carry forward First Lady Barbara Bush's unwavering belief that if you help a person to read, then their opportunities in life will be endless. She often said that literacy is the key that unlocks every door of opportunity and to live the American dream. And we see that truth play out every day in our work across this great city. Our mission is simple but profound: to improve lives through the power of literacy. We do that by mobilizing the community and volunteers, supporting parents as their child's first teachers, ensuring children have access to the books and reading opportunities they need, empowering teachers with resources to help boost the reading achievement of their students, and building capacity of community-based literacy programs, including those at Baker Ripley. Last year alone, tens of thousands of children and adults benefited from literacy programs and initiatives supported by our foundation. We are deeply honored to be selected as a 2025 Community Grants Program recipient by Port Houston. Your investment will help us to equip underserved children with books and inspire their love of reading. Study after study has shown that the presence of books in the home is one of the strongest predictors of a child's educational success, stronger even than a family's income or a parent's level of education. Yet here in Houston, right here in the neighborhoods surrounding Port Houston, far too many children still do not own books of their very own. Your grant will help us expand our My Home Library programs to children at Carrillo and Gallegos Elementary Schools. My Home Library gives children the joy and dignity of choosing books that reflect their interests, cultures, and dreams. When children have books at home that they want to read, they're six times more likely to read them from cover to cover. And when reading becomes a habit, confidence grows, academic success follows, and the trajectory of a child's life can shift. We are incredibly excited to join Port Houston volunteers next Tuesday at Gallegos Elementary School. Not only will you be placing books into children's hands, you'll be building home libraries and building futures. And those moments of connection, encouragement, and shared joy really matter. Children will remember who helped make reading fun and accessible to you. On behalf of our board of directors, our staff, and the more than 700 children whose lives you were helping to shape, thank you. Thank you for believing in Houston's children. Thank you for investing in literacy and opportunity. And thank you for choosing to partner with the Barbara Bush Houston Literacy Foundation to help children dream bigger, achieve more, and reach their full potential. We look forward to deepening our relationship and continuing this important work together, because every child deserves a chance to read, and every child deserves a chance to succeed. Thank you again for your time and your leadership. It's an honor to be here today. Wishing you all happy holidays. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Up next, we have Amina Bishkwa from Bend Justice.
Good morning. In the name of God, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful. Good morning, Commissioners. I am Amna Itak, a licensed clinical social worker supervisor and co-founder of the Fort Bend Coalition for Justice. I'm here speaking on agenda items regarding Barbara's Cut infrastructure. Barbara's Cut is a terminal where shipments of wings used for the genocide of Palestinians. My work is in diagnosing and treating trauma, the wound that occurs when safety and dignity are shattered. I am here because I see a parallel, a large-scale trauma being facilitated in part through your infrastructure. The Port of Houston is a link in a supply chain ending in Gaza's devastation, contributing to moral injury in our community, and it is my moral and religious duty to stand witness to this trauma we are inflicting. The facts are grave. In September 2025, UN reported, determined Israeli forces have committed acts meeting four of five genocide criteria under the Genocide Convention. It named 45 companies for potential complicity, including Maersk and Lockheed Martin, for shipping weapons components, stating they are providing technology and materials for the genocide of Palestinians in Gaza. The outcome is catastrophic. Over 680,000 deaths in Gaza, nearly 490,000 of them children. Each number is a life extinguished and a generation traumatized. The F-35 fighter jet parts, for which moved through Barbara's Cut Terminal to Lockheed Martin, has been linked to bombing hospitals, schools, refugee camps, churches, mosques, and homes. The port is a public institution funded by our tax dollars. Enabling shipments for a campaign accused of genocide makes our community passively complicit, creating a moral injury, the distress from violating our core ethics. My faith, Islam, and the Christian faith of many here teach that peace requires justice. The Quran commands standing firm in justice, even against ourselves. The gospel blesses the peacemakers. To be a peacemaker is to dismantle the machinery of war. I urge you to fulfill your legal and moral duty. The UN calls on all institutions to cease arms transfers that could contribute to any type of genocide. You have the power to ensure our port is for legitimate commerce, not weapons linked to genocide. The children of Palestine and the conscience of Houston await your action. Choose to be peacemakers through accountability and justice, through the mercy that God places in all of our hearts. Maybe one day we can get Walmart to ship Barbies to children in Gaza, just as we have given them to children here in Houston, as one of the commissioners just mentioned, so we can bring smiles to their faces instead of sending them bombs that murder them. Thank you.
Thank you. And next up, we have Terrence Bankston, I believe virtually.
Yes, good evening. My name is Terrence Bankston. I am the Port's campaign manager for Friends of the Earth, which is a nonprofit here in the United States. Also, I am a member of the Houston Healthy Ports Coalition, whom I represent on today. There are two points I would like to make, and again, thank you for the opportunity to speak. The HHPC recently met with the port and also with Bridget Murray from ACTS, and there was some sort of final document, and I don't know if it has a sophisticated or official name yet, that the port has produced. And we wanted the opportunity to review and comment. And we have followed up since that meeting with a written request. So we wanted to put that on record and also acknowledge the fact that we do recognize and appreciate the port's recent completion of the public outreach effort. And to that credit, I was told two different numbers, so hopefully that can be confirmed too, 3,000 people. And then another colleague emailed me and said, I thought it was 30,000. Either way, definitely a Herculean job, but we would want to clarify that. Point two, regarding the use of the DMPAs in Galena Park and Pleasantville for Project 11, one, we would like to request a meeting with Bill Empson, and please accept apologies if I pronounced the last name incorrectly, and the Port Authority's leadership. And number two, we would like for Bill to have the opportunity to present his work at one of our future Port Commission meetings, which every other month I facilitate as well. Again, thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Next up, we have Leo Luna from the Church at Bethel.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning, commissioners. This is regarding agenda items G, J, and K, for which are involved in the funding and provided for Barbara's cuts. So, as it's mentioned, my name is Leo Luna, and I'm here representing a church called Bethel HTX. It's located in the Second Ward. And it's through my faith that I'm also involved in political work as an activist in the way that Jesus himself was throughout the gospel in his acts against injustice, for righteousness, and with love. I'm involved with political organizations and communities of faith that have those same practices, such as PSL, which is why it's mentioned. And I'm here to speak regarding the mass shipments that take place through our ports. I'd like to start off with the scripture in the way that I start off with my kids as a director of the youth ministry. And this is one I share with them frequently, not only in recitation, but also in practice. In the first book of the gospel, Matthew 25:40, cites Jesus Christ himself saying the following. Truly, I tell you, how you have treated the least of my brothers and sisters amongst you, you have also treated me. Here he shows us that how we show up with intentionality matters in expressing a God-given love for one another. That involves our capacity to understand the downtrodden and marginalized communities, to do our work of faith to exalt that in those same marginalized people. Our work, that faith without the work is a dead faith. And it is unto us as active participants to keep that faith a living, growing one throughout the works that we do. Throughout risking the presumption of many people here being people of faith yourselves, I call to you to be active participants in yours and stand for righteousness and against injustice, to treat the least of these as you would Jesus, which in this day and age is the marginalized, the martyred, the suffering, and suffering genocide in the birthplace of Jesus himself in Palestine. It is under your watch of the ports through Barbara's cuts that parts of the F-35 are transported through to later find themselves in Lockheed Martin's hands, to then end up in the airspace, continuing the committal of genocide upon Gaza's remaining people. Bomb after bomb dropped, blown by the same wing view it continues to allow through. I ask you and challenge you to ask yourselves, is the price truly worthwhile? After 2 years of intensified genocide, there have been almost 700,000 people whose lives have been extinguished, of which almost 500,000 being children themselves. The least of these are being targeted with reckless abandon and with genocidal intent and are martyred continually even after a supposed ceasefire was called. The parts of weapon that pass approved through your hands here end up raining down destruction upon hospitals, leaving craters where people were barely surviving in refugee tents, and extinguishing the life into martyrdom of the children that are the age of my own kids in our ministry. And as a community member and as a Christian, I join my sister in humanity in urging you to make these immediate actions. One is investigating Maersk shipments of military cargo. The second is the Port of Houston must cease all shipments of military cargo to Israel. And I implore you to consider the cost of your choices, of your actions, and to do works of faith in your actions upon the foundation of love. Choose justice. Choose righteousness. Choose humanity. Choose love of life. Choose to do your parts in helping end the genocide of today's and tomorrow's.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next up, we have... Anish Azar.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you, Commissioners, for the opportunity to speak. I'm also speaking in regards to agenda items G, J, and K, which involve the funding provided for Barber's Cut Terminal. My name is Binish Azar. I'm a journalist. I've been a local to the greater Houston community my whole life, and I'm an alumni at the University of Houston. I learned about the Houston Arms Embargo campaign this month, or last month, at the Houston International Maritime Conference in November. But I have watched for more than just 2 years Israel's destruction and occupation of Palestine. In these 2 years, however, over 600,000 Palestinians have been killed, and over 250 of them were journalists and media workers. I watched Israel's assassinations of Anas al-Sharif and Saleh al-Jafarawi on my phone. And now I've learned that the weapons being used on them cannot be made without the shipments going right through the port of Houston. I was in the panel preparing for business as usual when a young activist yelled from the crowd that Maersk is shipping weapons for Israel through the port of Houston. My colleagues and I had spoken with the campaigners picketing outside the day before. It has been shocking to learn that Israel's primary weapon is built in just Fort Worth and that the ports are going through and that the parts are going through this port. It was worse to see the Port Authority and executives' reactions, which disturbed me and my coworkers, making a joke of that brave person who confronted Maersk by singling themselves out in a group of hundreds of people. It made me feel horrible, as I'm sure it did for many of the people in the room who have been watching the massacres in Gaza, to see something like genocide be brushed off. As I witness the atrocities Israel is committing in Palestine, I'm heartbroken and invigorated to do more. Every single person in the city of Houston should know about the demand for an arms embargo at the Port of Houston. In my work, I learned about the relationships the U.S. has in seaborne trade, the power it yields through sanctions and arms embargoes. That's why I know shippers, dock workers, and port authorities like you have the power to stop these shipments. Commissioners, you have a specific insight into what it means to ship these parts for Israel, what it literally takes to commit a genocide, because it's being transported through your legal jurisdiction. The Port of Houston is why this city is complicit in genocide, by using workers' times and our city's infrastructure to violate international laws. These shipments cannot be ignored. That's why the arms embargo campaign's demands are simple. One, investigate Maersk shipments of military cargo for Israel through the Port of Houston. And two, the Port of Houston must cease all shipments of military cargo for Israel. In order for the Port of Houston to stop violating international law, they must stop shipping military cargo for Israel now.
Thank you. Next up, we have Alex McDonald, there's Coalition of Human Rights.
Good morning. My name is Alex McDonald, and I'm with the Texas Coalition for Human Rights. I'm here to talk about the Port of Houston operations and specifically the Marine Terminal Services Agreement with Maersk that you authorized in September. Although the media and the administration are claiming a peace plan and ceasefire are in place, Israeli attacks have continued almost daily. Since Israel and Hamas reached the truce deal on October 9th, more than 350 Palestinians have been killed and more than 900 injured. Again, that's during the so-called ceasefire. In the total of people have already mentioned it's in the hundreds of thousands. And Israel continues to violate the agreement in other ways. It is only allowing fewer than 200 trucks a day of food and other humanitarian aid rather than the 600 needed and agreed to in the ceasefire agreement. Clearly, Israel's starvation campaign continues. As I mentioned in this meeting on September 23rd, the United Nations Independent International Commission of Inquiry reported that Israel has committed genocide against Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Organizations such as the International Association of Genocide Scholars and Amnesty International have also stated that Israel's conduct meets the legal definition of genocide. The Genocide Convention obligates all countries to take actions to stop genocide. Under customary international law, which is binding to all states, countries must not aid or be complicit in any way. And while it's the federal government that is directly responsible under international law, U.S. states, and local public entities also have obligations not to materially aid genocide or commit grave breaches of international humanitarian law. The Port of Houston, aware of the substantial risk of genocide in Gaza, cannot hide behind federal policy. The Port of Houston has an independent duty to refuse participation. And yet I understand that the Port of Houston is participating, that at least 10 shipments of F-35 wings have arrived into the Port of Houston since the September meeting, the F-35 being the aircraft that drops the 2,000-pound bombs that kill mostly civilians and destroy civilian infrastructure. I therefore ask you to not make yourselves participants in this continuing genocide. I ask that you not include Houstonians in continuing the genocide. I ask that you conduct full investigations of Maersk shipments to ensure that no military cargo that is ultimately bound for Israel go through our port. Growing up, I was told over and over again that as the Jews were being killed in the Holocaust, nobody did anything to stop it. That inaction while people are being massacred and ethnically cleansed weighs on me. I am glad that I can tell my children that at least I'm trying to stop this genocide. I hope that you will also be able to tell your children and grandchildren the same. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Reverend Maria Teresa Bautista Berrios from the Trinity Episcopal Church in the town.
Good morning. I'm Reverend Maria Teresa Bautista Berrios, and I am representing Trinity Episcopal Church and Houston Interfaith for Middle East Peace. Thank you, Commissioners, for the opportunity to speak in regards to MERS contract. We're in the season of Advent, a season where Christians around the world wait for the birth of a child born under occupation to a family seeking refuge in a land controlled by empires. Advent is also the season where John the Baptist breaks the silence in the wilderness, crying out, "Repent, for the kingdom of heaven has come near." Advent readiness is not passive waiting. It is active preparation. It is breaking the silence about injustice. It is calling systems to account. And it is preparing the way for God's transforming work, for truth to prevail and for justice to take root. In the Episcopal and Anglican tradition, at every baptism, we make sacred promises as a community. We are asked, will you strive for justice and peace among all people and respect the dignity of every human being? And we answer, and if you know the answer, say it with me, I will with God's help. This is a call to action that binds us as baptized people. The Port of Houston is a public institution funded by taxpayers and accountable to the public interest. A genocide is being committed in Gaza. The UN has explicitly named corporations involved in shipping military equipment as complicit in these crimes. Military aircraft pass through the port and are later used in attacks that have destroyed hospitals, schools, and homes. As people of faith, we cannot remain silent when our public infrastructure becomes complicit in the killing of any human life, the children, elderly, women, and men. The prophet Micah asks, what does the Lord require of you but to do justice, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God? Justice requires investigation. Mercy demands we stop the flow of weapons used to harm the innocent. Humility means acknowledging when our systems are being used for destruction rather than flourishing. Commissioners, you have the authority to ensure our court is not facilitating violence against children and families. You have the responsibility to investigate these shipments and to act in accordance with international humanitarian law and the moral conscience of this community. While many of us prepare to celebrate Christmas with our family, the decisions made in this very room have real consequences in the families in Gaza who will spend this season mourning their dead, searching for safety, and praying for peace that never comes. The choice is between complicity and courage, between prophet and prophetic witness, between looking away and standing up. We ask that you investigate MERS shipments of military cargo for Israel through the Port of Houston and for the Port of Houston to seize all shipments of military cargo for Israel. You have been entrusted with public resources. The people of Houston are asking you to use that trust wisely to ensure our port serves peace and not war, life, not death, and public good and not genocide. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we have one more, I believe, public speaker, and that would be Crystal De Leon Sarmiento.
Yes.
Candidate for Congress.
How are you? Thank you, guys. Well said. That's a mouthful there. I was born Crystal De Leon, or De Leon, and I blame my husband for the mouthful of the last name, so Sarmiento. So some familiar faces here. I just wanted to come and introduce myself as your candidate for Congress here in CD9. I jumped in the race 3 weeks ago because I was asked to, and I'm happy to have a one-on-one conversation to discuss those meetings that I've had. So with that, I want to start with, obviously, my prepared speech. I'm running for the United States Congress to represent this newly approved Texas Congressional District. It's an honor to speak with you. Because institutions carry as much economic weight, regional influence, and national importance as the Port of Houston. Very little do. As we've heard, the Port of Houston has made rounds around the world. Growing up in Houston, Southeast Texas, and now serving in local government as a council member myself, I have seen how deeply the port influences the day-to-day life of our communities, from job creation to workforce development to supply chain reliability and regional growth. The port doesn't just move cargo, it moves families, businesses, and the entire economy forward. That's why one of my top priorities as a candidate is to partner with you, to work alongside you, to ensure that the Port of Houston has a strong, informed, and dependable federal support it needs to continue leading the nation and the globe. As we all know, the port faces opportunities and challenges that require direct collaboration with Congress. Federal funding, regulatory oversight, security support, dredging approvals, infrastructure investment, and environmental permitting all rely heavily on Washington. And too often, these processes are delayed, disconnected, or influenced by people who do not understand our region or the critical nature of this port. District 9 deserves a partner and a representative who not only understands those needs, but is committed to being a hands-on partner, actively removing bottlenecks and championing the port's priorities at the federal level. I'm running on a simple principle. Our region deserves a voice who knows the ground truth, the reality of our communities, our industries, and our workforce, and who will translate that understanding into meaningful federal action. I understand that the port's priorities include this: continuing the expansion and deepening the Houston Ship Channel, securing consistent federal investment and modernization and safety, AI, right? The big trendy word. Strengthening energy factor logistics and export capacity, ensuring smart, efficient regulatory processes, my favorite word, efficient.
Wrap up,
please. Supporting workforce pipelines and maritime energy and logistics industries, and building resilience infrastructure ports, both economic output and community safety. These are not theoretical for me. These are issues for me. Okay. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. I welcome an introduction one-on-one with you guys. I appreciate the work y'all are doing, and I do empathize with what's going on in Gaza and in Israel. And I think that these issues are a federal one, and it requires collaboration. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Before we get to our agenda, are we completed with appearances, Eric?
Yeah.
Eric? Okay, great. I just want to take the opportunity before we get into our agenda to welcome a couple of folks here that I missed earlier. Jay Guerrero. Jay, thank you for being here. I want to thank you. Make sure you thank Senator Cornyn. Jay is on Senator Cornyn's team for his support in Washington. After everything that we did here at the port, we know he does a lot of heavy lifting for the state and for Port Houston as well. So please give him our best, and thank you for being here today.
I'll get you.
Okay, perfect. Also, I would like to welcome Mayor Michelle Bechtel over here. Wave. So Mayor Bechtel accompanied the team to Washington, D.C. last week to promote the Port of Houston. He is the current chairman of the Gulf Coast Protection District and also on the Pilot Commission Board, and has been selected to to the Port Commission, the Port Authority Commission is going to be taking Commissioner John Carlos's seat here, who is termed out. So we're going to welcome you next year. Thank you for being here, and thank you for all you do for to support the port and all of the other entities that you obviously have been involved in over the years. Very big advocate for our region and for the port overall. So
I'll let y'all be very nice and be very friendly.
We welcome his invigorating spirit. Thank you. Okay, so let's move on to our agenda. MF under general. So I think we're going to have Jessica and
Eric. Yeah. A couple of items very quickly. One is to follow on the action that the commission has taken earlier this year in connection with our power to help select the directors for the Harris Central Appraisal District Board of Directors, and this would be just an item to pass our things about. We're recommending one of the incumbents and one of the candidates that we previously Charlie Jenkins to help nominate. The second one relates to the designation of David McNamara to act as our public information coordinator. That's a title under the government code that allows him to undertake certain duties that he has with respect to public information. So with that, if you have any questions, I can try to answer them. And if you wanted to, I'd ask for a motion to approve these two items.
So moved.
Sure. Any questions or comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
That's passes. Mail indicator. Morning, Lori.
Good morning. How are y'all doing today?
Good.
Channel construction team has several agenda items today, but I'd like to briefly update you on the status of our maintenance project with Curtin Maritime. As of December 2nd, the pilots rescinded the working Bayport terminal draft restrictions for berth 1 through 6. So very good news on that front. Work it remains ongoing for the LBC berth 7 and the lay berth, and then maintenance dredging at Barber's Cut. And all that work is expected to be completed by the end of this month. So we can effectively move beyond that. So we have 8 items, G1 through G8, for your consideration and approval. Items G3 through G8 include typical leases, licenses, and renewals, but I'd like to highlight 2 items, G1 and G2, associated with maintenance dredging and consideration of contributed funds agreement with the Army Corps of Engineers in Galveston. G1 is ratification request for a change order in the amount not to exceed of approximately $3 million to Curtin Maritime for the emergency dredging and excess maintenance material at Bayport and Barber's Cut. Approximately 350,000 additional cubic yards of material came in between the time of advertisement and the start of dredging, and the Port Commission was notified via written memo on November 13th. Item G2 is for a contributed funds agreement with the Army Corps. Staff anticipates submitting several permit applications amendments associated with future channel and terminal developments in 2026. And if approved, this contributed funds agreement will pay the associated with Port Authority permit review evaluations under the Rivers and Harbor Act Section 408. For Commissioner Clunan's awareness, item G3 provides consideration of a Centerpoint pipeline license for a 30-year term. If there are no questions, I respectfully ask for your approval for all the 8 items, G1 through G8.
So moved, Mr. Speaker. There's a motion and a second, and I understand that Commissioner Clunan will be not be voting on number 3. Are there any questions or comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Lori. Next, we have commercial, Maria Lawrence.
Hello, good morning, Chairman and Commissioners. I'll be presenting this month's commercial division items on behalf of John Mosley. But before I do, I'd like to provide you all with a few commercial related updates. In recent conversations with our economic development partners, have indicated that the broader regional economy remains strong and active. Multiple companies, as many of you all have heard, are expanding their footprint, signaling continued investor confidence in the greater Houston area.
The region's ongoing economic momentum is expected to drive additional demand for industrial-related space and FTZ-ready real estate, which directly supports our throughput and logistics infrastructure goals and needs. Houston's development pipeline, as tracked by the Greater Houston Partnership, now includes 157 active projects, representing approximately $53 billion in capital CapEx and roughly 51,000 projected jobs. About 54% of those projects are tied to manufacturing, distribution, and logistics, underscoring the long-term strength of port-related demand. Additionally, there have been notable distribution and manufacturing leases this quarter. These large-scale leases and new manufacturing investments continue to highlight the sustained demand for cargo, long-term cargo and cargo volumes and stable container flows throughout the region. All that to say, the industrial market continues to perform well, and the strength in logistics, manufacturing, and port-related development supports continued demand for our services. So with that, I'll go ahead and stop there. And if there are no questions, I'll get into this month's two agenda items for commercial division. One real estate lease and one professional services contract extension. This month, we request your approval for H1, which is an amendment to the current lease with All Transport Services for approximately 1.04 acres out of block 23G at IDE to extend the term 4 months at an annual base rent of $44,868, followed by H2, a request to enter into a two-year professional services contract with a one-year extension option with shipping consultants for trade development activities on behalf of the Port Authority in Central and South America. The amount not to exceed $330,188 for a two-year contract period and for a one-year additional option period in the amount not to exceed $171,112. So if there are no questions on those two agenda items, I'll proceed to ask for your approval.
So move.
Okay. Any questions or comments? All in favor say aye.
Thank you.
Up next, we have finance with Chris Edwards, I believe. Chris. Morning.
Good morning, Chairman. Good morning, Commissioners. Christopher, Chief Financial Officer for the Houston Authority. Happy to present an update on our finances and some of the finance items. Port of Houston remains on course for record revenue, as discussed earlier. This is trending favorably against our 25 plan by around 3%. While November was a bit soft, these results are predominantly driven by strong year-to-date container throughput, as Ryan will address in Section L. Despite the heavier throughput, PHA and ILA teams continue to move cargo safely and efficiently, allowing us to deliver strong gross and cash margins, trending favorably against our 25 plan by around 12% as we close out the year. I want to also pause here for a brief moment to discuss the NextGen project and acknowledge the tremendous amount of work, the tremendous amount of quality work performed by our finance division, our human resources division, our information technology division, as we chart towards the course towards our NextGen go live on January 5th of 2026. Their commitment, truly an all hands on deck approach, has been exceptional. Tim and I could not be more proud of the leadership they've shown in tight coordination with our change management office and our system implementation partners. A special and big and potentially loud acknowledgement of Charles Thompson, our dedicated and driven CIO, who has led us through the storm. He's an exceptional leader, and we couldn't have done it without him. I'm grateful to be here.
Absolutely.
There's all of that. I'm grateful to be a part of this Port of Houston team and specifically this project. Turning to the finance agenda items, I-1 through I-3 include two critical technology contracts and one change in investment manager control. The first technology contract is Origami Risk, a risk management information system or what we call a remiss. Origami is a well-established remiss platform, and once implemented will significantly improve our reporting, transparency, efficiency, and compliance management within our self-insurance portfolio. This project will also migrate all related data in-house, supporting the port's business platform processing and reporting needs. This spend is not to exceed $500,600 over 3 years, and also provides two company options at the end of that term. And second, but hardly least, is Relish IQ is a Workday preferred vendor data assurance platform that will strengthen our procurement and contract to pay processes, confirming the accuracy, the security, and the legitimacy of our vendor master data. This spend will not exceed $141,518 per specific dollars. These platforms, in conjunction with our next-gen applications, are essential to modernizing our financial and operational systems. Over the life of these applications, they will bring greater data clarity, reduce compliance risk, streamline workflow, and create meaningful value for our internal teams and our external stakeholders. Last on the agenda is I3. It's a change in management investment manager control for your approval that relates to an update we received on December 1st. This is just a notification and change of control within Stevens Investment Management Group. This change is expected to have net zero impact for Port Houston or our plan participants. Management will continue to monitor the situation, assessing the financial and risk performance of all of our investment managers via normal course of business and policy. If there are no questions, I respectfully request approval of finance agenda items I1 through I3.
Motion.
Questions or comments? All fair to say aye. Infrastructure. Rich. Morning, Rich.
Good morning. And happy belated Thanksgiving to all of you and early holiday wishes. Today we have six items for the agenda, totaling a request of about $38 million. Before we do that, I would also like to thank the board for a few other things. During 2025, you approved 65 RCAs worth a total of close to $150 million, which is adding capacity for our port, and it includes repairs to wharves and sheds at the Turning Basin, design and construction of new yards and wharves at Bayport and Barber's Cut, improvements to our gates, breaking ground on the new PCC at Turning Basin, the design of the new Bayport South Access Road, and construction of a new San Houston boat. Since the last meeting, we have completed a couple of projects, Wharf 7, which was mentioned before, which includes a fire boat dock and additional lanes at the exit gate there at Barber's Cut. These are part of 30 projects that have been completed this year with a total of over $330 million. A couple of other brief notes. Chairman, I appreciate you bringing up the people and team comment about the way the port works. In terms of people, Craig Kastler, who was, you are here, was nominated to join the American Society of Civil Engineers COPRI Ports and Harbors Committee, whose purpose is to lead industry thinking in technical functions of ports and harbors. He joins Lori Brownell, who is a fellow with ASCE and past president of COPRI, providing industry leadership. The port also recently hosted two economic groups, the Rice University Master's in Energy Economics cohort, and also the Greater Houston Partnership's Energy Leaders cohort. And that brought in folks like Christine Schlenker, I know you're here, and Patrick Nowachikor, to provide economic perspectives on issues facing ports and shipping. Members of the port infrastructure team attended the Construction Management Association of America conference to bring back lessons learned to improve the way we do things here at Port Houston. We also attended the fourth annual general meeting and board meeting of the Blue Sky Maritime Coalition, which the port founded 4 years ago. And in that aspect, our sustainability program manager, who works on Candace's team, stepped up to lead a role around measurement and efficiency in driving cleaner and more economic shipping in brown water and blue water. We've talked about NextGen, team members working with IT and finance and PSCO focusing on a safety culture. We have collaborated with operations channel strategy and planning around the mega projects, T3, Bayport East End, Barber's Cut West End. And of course, I was glad that the Baker Ripley person showed up today because recently infrastructure staff donated over 100 hours in collaboration with community relations to support maintenance of the Baker Ripley House on Navigation Boulevard. So a lot of things happening. I wanted to mention that being the end of the year. And with that, I'll ask for approval of our six projects. Items 1 through 4 are fairly routine. They are focusing on infrastructure repairs, fender maintenance, and so forth at Barber's Cut and Bayport. Item 5 is a continuation of the program to add capacity through build out of Bayport Terminal. This will add 16 acres and ultimately 7 additional RTG served container stacked storage pads. And in the interim, part of that property is going to be providing ILA parking. And then item 6 is a change order to address a schedule dependent project with a PCC. We need to keep it on schedule. That's a not to exceed amount because we are currently brainstorming ways to value engineer and make that amount a lot less. With that, I'll ask for approval of items 1 through 6 or answer any questions.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Second.
Any questions? Not on paper, say aye.
Aye.
Not this. Yep. Nathan. Edwin from me. Nathan.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Chairman, Commissioners, a lot of good highlights you've heard this morning. I would like to continue that with the discussion of the maintenance division, and I'll get to the one item we have, but not many. So with that, I know, Ryan, you're next, but I'm going to take their attention for the next 47 minutes, okay? Maintenance is large. There's three pillars to it, and I want to make sure that if you know me as Nathan, the director of Fort Crane, there's two other divisions within maintenance that are highly and equally contributable. They often get overshadowed, but I told Paula I wanted to take a minute to really highlight those other two departments. The first one, which is facilities and equipment, that's led by Director Mike Gignac. Some of the terminal readiness, we heard about Wharf 7 coming online very soon. That team also contributed to the container yard pads that are going to be probably a lot more active. So what they did is restriped all those, help the operators, help ops. We want to make sure when 7 goes online, all the container pads in that area are fully functional. Some significant energy and cost reduction, something that the maintenance team as a service industry division doesn't really get to do is take time and reflect it on themselves. With the recent Bayport extension of the maintenance complex, we took the opportunity of the heavy equipment shop and updated all the lights from just a low efficiency bulb to some high efficiency LEDs. There's about 40 technicians that operate in that building every 24 hours. They were highly appreciative. To ensure uninterrupted terminal operations, the facility teams also executed extensive plumbing infrastructures across all facilities. And then lastly, the fleet department. You're probably familiar with the approval of all the vehicles. That's only one portion of actually the capital plan for maintenance. We just wrapped that up. They were able to finish up the vehicle plan purchases, every other piece of equipment minus the cranes. Next department, the maintenance planning and inventory department, that's led by Director Hugh Moore. We talked about Charles and some of the integration. One of the biggest parts of the integration that maintenance involved is the timekeeping, which we're converting from Kronos to the new Workday time clock. Hugh was given the task of enrolling 283 maintenance employees by this Friday. We go live Saturday. I'm told as of this morning, he's down to the final 6. Also talk about Workday, the Maximo plan when we're going to M5 and converting. We're currently establishing some standardized specifics related to the component data for the STF and RTG cranes. Again, I'm trying to show you how impactful Hugh's department supports the crane division. And then lastly, Hugh also was able to onboard a maintenance analyst that's currently been tasked with several key items, but a few things that are going to be really critical to support the crane division again is integrity of data. We want to make some secure data-driven decisions moving forward, and this maintenance analyst is going to ensure we do that. Now moving on to the crane department. Charlie, you mentioned a little bit about our major asset expansion. The first batch of RTGs, we got an update this morning, should hit the pilot station December 16th. The second batch, the loading is going to begin about 1 week from today and should arrive right after the new year, January 4th. STS cranes, I believe that was covered. But in addition to the RTGs, you mentioned the first batch of five. I would like to remind you that there's going to be 11 more and two separate batches also arriving at A+. For timing, I'm going to just run down to one item for the crane department. In July of 2024, we approved a hybrid upgrade for Barber's Cut. That was 8 RTGs. One thing that I totally missed on the cost analysis is repurposing some drives that I didn't know then that the team that works in the RTG and STS discovered. So to give you just a quick high level, there's some inverters on those cranes that are valued at about $40,000. Some of the technicians observed that with some minor Tony Cranes engineering, we can repurpose those and use those for the 4 STS cranes, also at Barber's Cut. So a little, when we talk about cost reduction, I'm seeing about $300,000 in parts that we won't have to buy in the future because we just repurposed them. Cool. Moving on to the only agenda item, K1. It's a routine. It's actually been a port commission approval since 2019. We're asking to approve a 2-year preventative maintenance and inspection services for Vertiv, the sole source provider for the Leavers UPSs. We mainly support the IT division. Those UPSs, they supply battery, there's transfer switches, power distribution units, and monitoring products. A lot of that is on the critical equipment, specifically in the container terminals, the gate operations. In the event, which often happens, we have a power loss in those facilities. These systems keep us online until the generators activate. And then in the facilities like this, all your server rooms are on battery backup that we support the IT with. So with that being said, if there's no questions, I'd like to present K1 for your approval.
So moved.
Any questions?
I got
go ahead.
So Nathan, I know I hadn't heard recently, are we able to hire all the technicians we need to keep the maintenance going? We short there for a long time.
We are. We have a few open positions, and one of my highlights here, I'd like to touch on it. We did successfully onboard our 5th crane tech apprentice for our apprenticeship program. We have some top-tier crane techs, mechanics, and electricians that support all departments. But under the maritime workforce strategy, you know, we're trying to find a pipeline of future skilled workforce. We're investing in the kids and in our community to try to develop them, and we have hired off 1, but besides that, the open positions follow. I believe we're right where we need to be.
Here, I think we have probably 5 that exclude some retirement and you know, they left the floor, so it's very, very good. It's really good. Thanks to HR for working with
that. Yeah, so since you're up here and not him. Y'all doing a good job. Thank you.
Okay, we have motion on the account. Any questions about the okay, we'll say
aye.
Okay, thank you.
Ryan, you're up next.
Oh, yeah. Just me and the lab chair.
Morning, Chairman and Commissioners. I'll try to keep my remarks brief and come in under 47 minutes, I think. Today, 3 items on the agenda for your consideration, but first, I'd like to provide a few highlights through November of our operations. While we did see a significant slowdown in cargo volumes across all sectors for the month, like Charlie mentioned, volume through the public terminals remained up about 4%. It was handled over 50 million tons year to date. Tonnage at our multipurpose facilities flipped in the month, and now it's effectively flat. Steel, as expected, fell off dramatically for the month and is now down 6% for the year. Bulk cargoes on the dry and liquid side also dipped slightly, but remain up 5% year-to-date. A couple positive notes. The bulk plant reported its highest export month of the year, and the grain elevator at Woodhouse reported the second highest export month for the year. Container volumes, to further Charlie's point, followed the same downward trend for the month, but both loads and total TEU remain up 5% for the year. Growth of the container terminals continues to be driven by the export market, with loaded export TEU up 8% year to date, while imports remain essentially flat. This continues to narrow our trade closer to balance at 55-45 imports-exports, which is historically the area that we live in. As Lori mentioned, dredging has been completed at Bayport. Barber's Creek is soon to continue and will be complete by the end of the year. And I want to mention that because a big thank you goes out to the pilots and everyone along the Houston Ship Channel that helped us mitigate the delays to our vessels as we went through that process. Back to the agenda, three items this month for your consideration. I'd like to highlight L2. This is the annual renewal of our stevedoring licenses. The reason I bring this one up is this year we're including a performance clause in the license. The licenses for those that are active in the container terminals. The clause defines performance standards, reporting requirements on a quarterly basis as we continue to work with all of our partners to improve vessel productivity, mitigate costs, and increase densification in the terminals. Happy to answer any questions that you have. Otherwise, I request your approval for L1 through L3.
Thanks.
Any questions, comments? All in favor say aye. Thank you, sir. Brian. Next up, we have Felicia Wright. Morning, Felicia.
Good morning.
Good morning, Chairman and Commissioner. Thank you, Chairman, for what you said earlier today about people and how people drive the business. We really do believe that. As you can see, I've got a lot of agenda items today, and so I'm going to forego any people-related updates. I just want to thank Chris and Charles. It's been a long journey going through this next gen, and I'll let Charles kind of highlight the team and everything that everyone's doing there. And so I've got eight items today, M1 through M8. To make this efficient, I've organized my remarks into three categories. Our new administration building, our annual benefits and HR advisory renewals, and the retirement plan updates that require public hearing. I'll walk each briefly. I'll begin with the new administration building readiness. As you know, next month, as you mentioned earlier, we will begin our transition into the new executive office building. The first two items, agenda items M2 and M8, support the operational readiness and phased move plans. For M2, staff recommending a three-year contract with two one-year options to SCS Maintenance and Cleaning LLC, which is a certified small business, and the amount not to exceed $663,883. This follows a competitive RFP with 15 proposers and ensures that we have daily cleaning, quarterly floor care, and strong quality control plan in place for the new building. For M8, we're requesting approval of an additional $38,835 to C-Move Consulting to support the expanded multi-phase move strategy. This includes the January advance team preparing the building for day one operations, the May move later in January, and a later April move for finance and records tied to year-end closeout and specialized packing needs. This M8 was previously under the legal department, but as Eric transitioned the building over to the people team, it's been moved under our area. The next group includes five items tied to our benefits, claims funding, and HR advisory support. Agendas M3 through M7. For M3, we are requesting $2 million in additional funding to responsibly close out the 2025 plan year due to higher than expected catastrophic claims. For M4, we request authorization of $22.5 million for the 2026 plan year based on actuarial modeling, historical utilization, and projected enrollment. Overall, this is a 7.5% increase. I want to take a moment to speak to the performance of our self-funded insurance program. This past year and going into 2026, we're experiencing increases in medical and pharmacy costs consistent with national trends. Just last week, I was at a Gartner local conference, and one of the themes is that insurance premiums are going up across the board, so both self-funded and fully funded insurance programs. Gallagher continues to monitor whether self-funding remains the most cost-effective strategy for Port Houston. Each year, they compare our actual self-funded claims to the estimated cost of a fully insured premium. Across the program's history, the port has continued to save between $1 million to $5 million per year, with exception to two fund years, 2019 and 2021, demonstrating sustained long-term financial advantages under the self-funded model. Based on current trends, self-funding remains the most financially responsible approach for the Port of Houston. For M5, we're requesting a renewal of our consulting agreement with Gallagher Benefit Services in an amount not to exceed $100,000 for an additional year. For M6, we request approval of our 2026 stop-loss agreement with Aetna in an amount not to exceed $3.13 million, ensuring continued catastrophic protection for the plan. And then for M7, we request approval for a contract with Gartner Incorporated in an amount not to exceed $126,000, providing enterprise-wide HR research, benchmarking, and advisory services as we continue modernizing our people strategy and system infrastructure. Finally, I'll move to agenda item M1, which includes a required public hearing. Today, we're asking the Commission to consider amendments to the Port Authority's 401A Defined Contribution Plan and 457 Deferred Compensation Plan. These updates reflect changes in the applicable law and provide clear administrative guidance for both plans. Working with Nationwide Retirement System, our plan administrator, and our benefits counsel at Haynes and Boone, staff has prepared updated plan documents aligned with Nationwide's most current format. The revisions clarify default beneficiary rules, eligibility for employees paid through port payroll, even if they are ILA members, permit Roth deferrals in the 457B plan, and clarify overtime exclusion for the 401A plan. At this time, I will turn it over to Dave McNamara, Associate General Counsel, who will conduct the public hearing in accordance with the Texas Water Code, including the required employee notice provided on December 4th. After the hearing concludes, I will return to request approval to amend and restate both plans and authorize the CEO to take reasonable actions needed to implement the changes.
Yes, very quickly, under the Texas Water Code section 60.011, before we amend our retirement plan documents, we're supposed to give notice to our employees, which we did last week, and then conduct a public hearing. So this is now the beginning of that public hearing. If anyone has any public comments that you would like to make with respect to agenda item M1, we invite you to do so now.
Any comments or anyone who wants to talk about it? Okay, do we need to open and close it? Or?
Yes, we can now. If there are no comments, we can now close the hearing.
Okay, well, we opened it, now we're going to close it.
Thank you.
Okay, great.
With that, Chair and Commissioners, agenda items M1 through M8 collectively support a smooth transition into our new administration building, strengthen the long-term stability of our self-funded benefits programs, modernize our HR advisory capabilities, ensure our retirement plans remain fully compliant. If there are no further questions, I'd like for you, I'm requesting your approval.
Fully compliant is with
any
questions? If not, all fair to say aye.
Thank you.
Up next, we have two more. Amy, morning.
Good morning, Chairman, Commissioners. My name is Amy Seymour. I'm the Chief of Port Security and Emergency Operations. Before presenting today's two items, I want to take the time to recognize the critical role that our fire department plays in protecting the Port of Houston and Houston Ship Channel. Their work is essential to safeguarding our people, our facilities, and the commerce that moves through the region. And just last week, the department participated in two major exercises. One was with Valero Houston Refinery, and another with Pemex Deer Park. During the Valero tank drill, it was noted that the use of our fireboats was critical to the success of that large-scale operation, particularly with supplying the water that was needed in order to support their foam system. At the Pemex exercise, the Unified Command highlighted just how engaged our team was and how valuable their feedback was with the operational insight. It was especially meaningful for them to have the Port Houston there and our fireboats that were included in the scenarios. As the refinery exercises, they primarily focused on inside of their fence lines. Our fire department was able to help broaden the perspective by providing clarity on the port's jurisdiction there with the essential coordination that we share with the U.S. Coast Guard. So bravo, and thank you to the entire team for an exceptional job done. I also want to highlight another significant personal professional achievement for our fire chief, William Buck. He served on the NFPA Technical Committee on Maritime Terminals. He helped to lead the development of the newly updated 2026 edition for the NFPA 307. This national standard was for the fire protection of marine terminals, piers, and wharves. His contributions directly shaped the standard that will guide all of marine fire protection across the country. This is an outstanding accomplishment for Chief Buck and a point of pride for the Port of Houston Authority. Chief Buck could not be here this morning. He is with one of our fire teams currently conducting live fire scenarios at Houston's Falshanki training facility, alongside obviously the Houston Fire Department, Pasadena, Baytown, and Texas City. We want to thank him and recognize him. Moving into my two items. Item number one, it involves the continued maintenance and readiness for our three fire boats. This requires routine dry docking, preventative maintenance in order to remain mission ready. This is for fires, hazardous material incidents, and maritime rescue along the Houston Ship Channel. This work is going to include hull work, jet system maintenance, painting, and other essential repairs that may come. We're requesting the approval to award a 3-year shipyard services contract to National Cotton, doing business as Pier 77 Marine. Number two supports our phase four for continuous performance improvement with CAVU International. CAVU has been an instrumental partner in strengthening our leadership communication and our operational discipline across the PSEO division. Our next phase continues that progress. It will enhance our readiness with continued performance communication and will embed a continuous improvement culture on briefing and debriefing across all of our PSEO divisions. If there are no questions, I respectfully submit those for your approval.
So moved.
Any questions? Any questions or comments? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Jamie. Up next, we have Candace.
Good morning. Good morning.
Morning.
Happy December. The strategy team is closing out the year with some noteworthy accomplishments. I just want to highlight a couple. The grants team, along with the portfolio, the wide portfolio of grants that they monitor and manage, is ending the year initiating a new application for a new grant for 2026. So the Port Infrastructure Development Program grant notice funding opportunity opens in just 2 weeks. So we're already preparing for next year's grant programs. This is a grant we apply for every year to help extend our facility infrastructure. Sticking on with grants, today we have an item 01 on today's agenda requesting your approval to enter into an agreement to accept nearly $7.7 million in Seaport Connectivity Program funds from TxDOT. These funds will be used towards construction of a critical roadway accessing the Bayport Container Terminal. The planning team is engaged in efforts towards facility expansions and rehab, container terminal densification, studying the future market conditions, and collecting valuable reports on things like equipment, traffic, and drainage. These efforts require heavy internal and external collaboration and to make sure we have a comprehensive plan. Last month in the Port Commission meeting, you approved the 2026 budget as well as the strategic plan revision. You were also presented with the staff recommended 2026 strategic targets. Today I come representing people, finance, strategy, and legal to request your approval for the 2026 Employee Incentive Award Program. As you know, the Employee Incentive Award Program is based off of financial operating cash flow performance, execution of strategic targets, and completion of all mandatory compliance training. All Port Houston divisions have been involved in the development of these targets and are prepared to successfully execute the activities within each target. To summarize quotes and advice from Michael Porter, a well-known economist and professor of the Harvard Business School, strategy is a set of choices, things to do and things not to do. We have chosen specific priorities to position this organization in a place to successfully support our mission and vision. If there are no comments or questions, I humbly ask for your approval in items 01 and 02.
Go ahead. I have a question. I guess this directs you to Charlie. As a frequent miserable traveler on 146, that's a real port and which is a suburb of Morgan's Point, by the way. I know that we had a meeting, participated in a meeting with TxDOT regarding speeding up the world's longest construction project through there. We get any traction, or do you have any feedback from TxDOT as to the time frame when they're going to
Sure. So Highway 146 improvements, and I believe Red Bluff up to 225 is in process. It's a very long process. Williams Brothers, I believe, the contract. And they're severely limiting the throughput in that highway during the construction progress.
Yes, they are.
Which in my mind generally is daylight, so say 5 a.m. to 4 p.m. or something, and they're shut down. They don't work nights, they don't weekend, they have no incentives. We've had very significant conversations with TxDOT staff, from the regional district engineer to the executive director of TxDOT, Mark Edwards, to the board, and they're working on strategies to do that. It's coupled with another problem at the same time, that 225, not 146, needs that significant expansion. They are very far behind on the process because they have not been funded to start the process. So in a combined effort, we're actually working on 146, speeding it up, and starting the environmental and the stuff necessary to promote and develop Highway 225. Challenges, TxDOT staff tells that they need to reprogram $422 million from other projects to be able to do that, to start now or wait for the next biennium, which would be July of 27. So there's a big initiative. We've met with head of appropriations. We're meeting with the Senate. There's a big, huge effort behind it, but we need both of them. And we've had strong conversations and making progress, and no resolution yet. Unless you have any additional update from what I've said?
No, spoken beautifully. Yeah, you're exactly right. We're pretty much engaged, trying to do whatever we can to push things along. I drive that every day myself, coming from Lake City. I share your pain.
It's only about $14 million to incentivize, roughly.
Yeah.
It's not negotiated to speed up to 25 and make it a more aggressive program. I'm also focused on making sure that doesn't happen again. They don't need to be shutting down a main artery and restricting the flow, because it's having very, very significant economic consequences through the region, through the whole state, not just us. But I expect something soon in the next few months to get to closure, and we'll report back a lot of optimism. If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Without any items on his agenda today, we have bus reason.
Chairman, as I stated in the October meeting, I didn't have any intention to bring items to the agenda in December, but I will bring some back in January.
We appreciate it. See that shirt.
So I wear this shirt in honor of everyone on the project team. And I thank my colleagues for honoring me with their humble comments. I am overwhelmed by the level of effort. When Charlie says one port, one team, I want to share some statistics, if I may, about next-gen ERPs and how this port has leaned in, not just the executive folks, not the folks in this room. Over 116 Port Houston people were involved in some form or fashion of testing from last year, mid-year to now. We did 1,191 functional end-to-end tests. That included payroll and cross-domain business process scenarios end-to-end, 6,000 steps to prove that our platform works. We had 760 integration scenarios testing, talking to banks, testing, talking to benefits, making sure our money moves in the right places, Tim, or Alicia. And that includes 44 integrations. We have 304 reports. What's really important is today we will finalize the 17 work streams with the data conversion from all those systems we're going to retire. And those people who are proving the data works have to sign off. So I am very happy to be honored by my colleagues to say we're here we are. But, you know, the executive steering committee tomorrow is called Go, No Go. Based on what you heard today, it's a go. So tomorrow morning we'll sign the formal documentation to tell Workday we want to go from pre-go live to production, which will start December 15th in a phased process. And I thank, you know, Nathan for mentioning maintenance is the first payroll. It's the most complex payroll, but they're registering their fingerprints so that we can actually have them start capturing their time next week, which means we know from our payroll team that they're going to get the right payment. But
you'll know from them too.
I got to take a step back and step to the side a little, Chairman and Board Commissioners. I got to honor these two individuals on my team who have been boots on the ground. Courtney Sullivan Board was started as a project manager for ERP. Now she's the director of IT programs and has been driving this daily, weekends included. And Mr. David Lopez started out as a JDE functional technical resource before I got here. 12 years today, yeah? And now he's leading the IT ERP team for NextGen, which was envisioned when we started talking about this back in 2020. So all that said, we're going to go. We have, I don't know how many people we trained. There's just a few people left, and I was really pleased to hear only 8 folks had not registered. I can't thank everyone for their trust in me, but I want to thank everyone for their sacrifice and contributions. But I will come back next month in February. In the new PAB building, my team's over there. We're going to make it work, Charlie. We will make it. Because we always do. Thank you very much.
Okay, so I believe that's the end of the regular agenda. We're going to then go to
Mr. Chair, before going to executive, I'd like to notice that if we got some of our container steamship lines here with us today. And we want y'all guys to always know you're part of our team. So we like to see y'all come out and participate.
Huge part of our team.
Yes. Well, I don't tell them that.
I think they know that. That's great. Well, thanks for coming. We appreciate it. Okay, let's go ahead and take a quick break, and then we'll do an inspection today.
McFan, the Port Commission of the Port Eastern Authority of Harris County, Texas, will now convene in a closed meeting as permitted by the Texas Open Meetings Act and Government Code to conduct a consultation with attorneys, including consultations regarding 33 USPA sections 5B and 2236, Houston Ship Channel Expansion Channel Improvement Project, 19 USC 1701 and 19 USC 2411 at sea, Water Code Section 6462, Claim George Head Contractor, Inc., and Agreement for Legal Support Services of Brown Caldwell, and deliberate regarding real estate, including deliberations regarding disposition of Second Ward property, Saras County property, and Pelican Island property, economic development and negotiations or incentives, employment evaluation of public employment, related matters. Board Commission will reconvene in public session after the closed meeting is adjourned.
Okay, great. So we are
open your slides, guys.
Yeah, I got you. So the executive session is now over, and we are reconvening the meeting.
I have a motion to authorize the Port Authority to negotiate and settle the claims as George Head Contractors, Inc. on the terms discussed in executive session, and authorize the Chief Executive Officer to do all other things reasonable or necessary to give effect to the foregoing.
Second. All fair to say aye.
Aye.
Do we have anything else?
I've got one. I move that the Port Authority approve a legal services agreement with Brown and Caldwell on the terms discussed in executive session, and authorize the Chief Legal Officer to do any and all things necessary to give effect to the foregoing.
Second.
Fair to say aye.
Aye.
Okay, great. Anything else? I guess that's it. So I just want to thank everybody for being here today, and have happy holidays. We'll see you next year at our All right, you'll have to close it. Yeah, I'm sorry. And our next meeting is on January 27th of 2026 at the new East River. So make sure, commissioners, you're not here anymore.
I'm sorry.
So the meeting is now adjourned. Thank you. Okay, we are now going to open a local government meeting.